In their new reprisal attacks, the Yemeni armed forces hit what they call three vital targets inside of the Israeli-occupied territory. And the Israeli regime's continued aggression against Lebanon is pushing the ceasefire deal to the brink. Hello and welcome from Tehran. You've turned to World News. I'm Marzia Hashemi. Thanks so much for being with us. Well, starting this bulletin off in Gaza, where Israel's genocidal war continues across the strip, killing and injuring more civilians in the besieged territory. At least six more Palestinians were killed and many others injured in a missile attack on a school sheltering displaced people in Gaza City. In the south, three Palestinians were killed in Israeli bombardment targeting the city of Rafah. The regime's warplanes also bombed Beit Lahia in northern Gaza, killing at least 12 people and injuring around two dozen others. According to the Gaza Health Ministry, at least 36 more Palestinians were killed and 96 injured in Israeli attacks across the besieged strip during the past day. The death toll since October of last year stands at 44,502 people. Nearly 105,500 others have also been injured. Ahmed Al-Najjar, correspondent in southern Gaza's Khan Yunis, tells us more about the latest Israeli atrocities across the besieged strip.
What we can share so far is that at least 25 Palestinians have been killed just since this morning in several Israeli attacks that were carried across all the regions of the Gaza Strip, focusing on the northern parts, starting in Gaza City, where at least just three attacks were carried out by Israeli fighter jets and also fighter drones. Three separate attacks took place in the Gaza City, starting within Az-Zaytun neighborhood, where a school that was turned to shelter, Al-Falah School, was targeted by Israeli fighter drone, leading to the death of at least six Palestinians. In Gaza City as well, a group of people was targeted in the middle of Gaza City, where at least two Palestinians were killed in this attack. Also, a sports club that is called Al Jazeera Sports Club was targeted, as thousands of people are also seeking shelter in that place. Two Palestinians were killed in this attack. We have also here in the south, starting in the middle area of An-Nusayrat, where the shelling continues to pound the eastern outskirts of An-Nusayrat refugee camp, and also targeting the northern parts of it, where at least five Palestinians were injured, and they drew to the continuous attacks that have been carried out since morning and hasn't stopped so far.
Well, the Food and Agriculture Organization of the United Nations has called for unrestricted and safe access to deliver emergency aid into war-ravaged Gaza in order to prevent the spread of famine there. The Deputy Director General of FAO issued the call during a conference in Cairo that was attended by Egyptian officials and UN agencies like UNRWA. Beth Bechdel reiterated FAO's commitment to increase its humanitarian response to alleviate famine, but stressed that this can only be achieved with access to Gaza. She called on UN member states to pile up pressure on Israel to lift the ban on food deliveries and to fund FAO. Earlier, the Euro-Mediterranean Human Rights Monitor reported that nearly 70,000 Palestinians are trapped in northern Gaza, facing famine due to a crippling Israeli siege on the area for over 3 months now. Meanwhile, Palestinian resistance movement Hamas has agreed to form a governing committee with Fatah Party aimed at the administration of a post-war Gaza. The plan will have 10 to 15 nonpartisan figures approved by the committee. The candidates will hold important positions related to education, health aid, distribution, and reconstruction. The proposed deal is to be approved by the Palestinian president. The Hamas delegation was headed by Politburo member Khalil al-Hayya. Following a reconciliation agreement brokered by China earlier this year, both Palestinian factions have been working on ways to work together for the benefit of all Palestinians after long years of conflict. Syria's armed forces continue their operations against Takfir terrorist groups in the northwestern parts of the country, pounding their positions and gathering points. According to a military source, government forces are preparing to confront a terror group called Dar al-Zor Military Council, which is backed by the U.S. Also, reports suggest that Syria's allies have sent more equipment and personnel to help the army deal with the terrorists. In the meantime, fierce clashes are going on in the northern countryside of Hama in parallel with joint Syria-Russia airstrikes on terrorist hideouts. Now, the army earlier repelled attacks on Hama countryside, took full control of the strategic town of Khan Nasser, and secured an alternative road linking Aleppo to Hama. Clashes between the army and the foreign-backed terrorists erupted after Takfiri groups launched a surprise attack on some parts of Syria last week. Ibrahim Wahdi joined us earlier with more details regarding the military operations of the Syrian army to reclaim territories occupied by the terrorists.
It seems that the Syrian army has decided to establish its defense line all the way from Qalat al-Madiq north in the northern countryside of Hama to the south. The next step is to liberate Murek, because the town, this strategic town, also northern of Hama, is being now heavily bombed by the Syrian Arab army as a primary attack to launch an offensive and recapture the city. The Russian and Syrian the Syrian warplanes also have carried out non-stop airstrikes targeting hideouts of the terrorists, weapon depots, vehicles of various types, and inflicted many losses among the ranks of these terrorist groups in order to prevent them from establishing any fortified lines. This road, called Khan Nasser Road in Syria, links Hama and Aleppo from the east. So the Syrian Arab army moved toward the city of Khan Nasser and currently going to Umm Amuda and after that to Al-Sfira in order to reopen this road and to make it a bridgehead in order to the Syrian Arab army forces to launch their counterattack from there to Aleppo.
Well, Israel has carried out a fresh airstrike on Syria, hitting a car on a road leading to Damascus Airport. According to reports, one person was killed and another wounded in the Israeli drone attack without revealing the identity of the victims. Israel regularly targets positions inside of Syria, especially those of resistance forces who have played a key role in fighting foreign-backed terrorism. Israel has intensified its strikes on Syria over the past couple of months, despite the Arab countries' repeated complaints to the United Nations. Damascus condemns such attacks as a violation of its sovereignty and accuses the regime of propping up terror groups with its aerial raids. And now to Yemen, where the spokesman of the armed forces there has announced his country, alongside the Iraqi resistance, has conducted fresh attacks on the Israeli regime in solidarity with the people of Palestine and Lebanon.
The Yemeni armed forces, in cooperation with the Islamic resistance in Iraq, carried out three military operations against the Israeli enemy during the past 48 hours as follows. Two operations have targeted two Israeli targets in the northern occupied Palestine with a number of drones. Also, another operation targeted a vital target in Umm al-Rashrash area in the south of occupied Palestine with a number of drones. All three operations achieved their goals successfully. The Yemeni armed forces, alongside the Iraqi resistance, continue to respond to the crimes of the Israeli enemy against our brothers in the Gaza Strip. These operations will not stop until the aggression stops and the siege on the Gaza Strip is lifted.
Well, the ceasefire in Lebanon is getting shakier as Israel continues to violate the deal with the Arab country by launching strikes. France, a member of the international committee in charge of surveying the implementation of the ceasefire, says Israel has breached the truce more than 50 times. Israel's latest wave of airstrikes has killed a dozen more people in southern Lebanon. The regime has defended its actions and threatened to conduct more operations if the deal collapses. In response to the numerous Israeli violations, Hezbollah launched a volley of rockets as a warning last night. The ceasefire is still largely holding, but sporadic Israeli attacks in breach of the truce were reported soon after the deal came into effect last week. In spite of the continued Israeli aggression, the displaced Lebanese continue to return to their homes. Our Beirut correspondent, Mariam Saleh, joined us earlier with an update on Israel's repeated violations of the ceasefire deal, as well as Hezbollah's retaliatory response.
It seemed as if this whole ceasefire was going to collapse. If it hadn't been for perhaps the operation that was conducted by the resistance, that clearly was a message to the Israeli regime, as well as the monitoring committee, which is, of course, one of its members, is the United States. They considered this the first preliminary warning that they have issued for the Israelis launching an attack directly on one of the Israeli posts in the Raisat al-Alam area, which is in the occupied Lebanese Shabab Farms. And some strategy experts consider this a very smart move from the resistance, launching their operation in an area which does not go under the pretext and the mandate of 1701, but also saying once more that this is a cautionary measure made by Hezbollah in order to call on the committee to put more pressure on the Israelis. And this also led for the Israeli officials to once more renew their vows that they are for the ceasefire. And so we know from this that after that, the Israelis have once more said that no, they are going to continue with the ceasefire despite the continuous violations. We know in the last hour alone, the Israelis launched some drone attacks in the area of Deir Sirian. What they were targeting was mostly the valleys and the hills, so basically outskirts of those towns, the open areas, nothing within those in the heart of the villages and towns in South Lebanon. We also know that some of the Israeli Merkava tanks were moving forward of Khiam as well as in Wadi al-Hajir.
And now to South Korea, where the president there has declared an emergency martial law, accusing opposition leaders of anti-state moves to overthrow his government.
I declare martial law to protect the Free Republic of Korea from the threat of North Korean communist forces.
In a televised speech, President Yoon Suk-yeol accused the opposition party of crippling governance through impeachments and special investigations. He criticized the opposition for pushing through a revised budget, claiming it undermines essential national functions. The rival Democratic Party convened an emergency meeting condemning Yoon's declaration of martial law as unconstitutional. All political activities have been suspended, and military forces have sealed off the National Assembly under martial law. Well, the developments follow the opposition's recent calls for independent investigations into alleged scandals involving President Yoon's wife and top officials, intensifying political tensions in the country. South Korean National Assembly Speaker opened a plenary session to block the martial law declaration. Well, to make some kind of sense of everything that's happening, I'm going to cross over to Seoul and talk to our correspondent, Jennifer Chang. Jennifer, good to see you. Well, please fill us in on what's going on.
Well, President Yoon Suk-yeol appears trying to stave off impeachment and removal from office by declaring martial law, because now he is ruling the country through military force instead of being a democratically elected leader who can be lawfully impeached and removed from office. So this means that now South Korea is ruled by the military, and a coup d'etat could happen at any time that could topple Yoon Suk-yeol and replace him with, for instance, a military general. This is really a shocking development, and of course, many in South Korea had been hoping to remove Yoon Suk-yeol from power before he pulled off this type of a move, but they failed to do that. He was not impeached. They were trying to push through an impeachment motion in the parliament here, but before they could do that, he declared martial law. So this could backfire on him terribly. Right now, he and his wife are the target of protests that are going on in downtown Seoul every weekend. They are calling for the impeachment and removal of this First Lady and the President of South Korea, who are both deeply unpopular. These are some of the lowest approval ratings that have been seen in South Korea's history for President Yoon Suk. And there was an online petition that gathered so many signatures that by law he had to be impeached with that many signatures. So this is not a surprise, the fact that there was an impeachment motion against him, but the martial law declaration is a huge surprise with huge ramifications for South Korea. Right now, North Korea has a military alliance with Russia, and it is getting tons of military aid from Russia in the development of its nuclear weapons, while South Korea has no nuclear weapons. And furthermore, it's having problems getting military help from the U.S. The incoming Trump administration reportedly is demanding a much higher sum for defending South Korea militarily than the Biden administration demanded.
Mm-hmm.
So South Korea really is trying to keep up with North Korea by developing its own nuclear weapons, but this is going to be tough now. With this martial law, there is going to be a tremendous amount of internal strife.
All right. Well, thank you so much. That's Jennifer Chang, correspondent there in South Korea. And with that, it brings us to the end of this World News Bulletin. Thanks so much for staying with us.
Ever since you left, I must confess, the world has become a total mess. You were the bridge that connected hearts, always there for us when we were in distress. Everywhere I look, I see your tracks. You tried to make the world a better place. Oppressors will never forget your frown. The oppressed will not forget the smile on your face. Oh, how you shine like a constellation in the sky. Oh, how you shine in the minds of nations that hold you high. Oh, tell me how it feels under the tree of bliss. The trees you planted are missing you, but they've learned to blossom just like you. Though you were martyred mercilessly, an army of you is growing globally. 'Cause people are tired of all this prejudice. They wanna fight like you against injustice.
Your name is Qasem Soleimani. You're a hero of humanity.
You defy the limits of intelligence, sending shivers down the spine of global arrogance. You decried oppression in every form, even though it put you in the eye of the storm. You extinguished the flames of terror far and wide. You helped countries to reclaim their land that was occupied. That's why people will remember you as a hero. Though the powers that be will picture you as a foe. You see, they instigate the terror and manipulate the news so they can whitewash every crime to make the world confused. They can say what they want, let them curse at the mirror. Truth will always prevail, let them live in error.
You found the key to heaven's gate. Martyred for justice, what a noble fate. Your legacy will linger on. Forever your name we celebrate. Oh, how you shine like a constellation in the sky. Oh, how you shine in the minds of nations that hold you high. Oh, tell me how it feels under the tree of bliss. Constellation in the sky. Oh, how you shine in the minds of nations that hold you high. Oh, tell me how it feels under the tree of bliss. Oh, how you shine. Oh, how you
This title given to the 11th Imam, Al-Askari, is because of a military camp.
Al-Kindi, he was a philosopher who lived during the time of Imam Hassan Al-Askari. When he gets there, he finds Imam moving towards a community who are anticipating him.
This is Dialogue, an introduction on the most important dialogues and conversations of Imam Hassan al-Askari, alayhi salam. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. The program is Dialogue, and I'm your host, Mehdi. Today we want to talk about one of the great personalities in the early history of the Muslims, Imam Hassan al-Askari, alayhi salam. Please stay tuned. Imam Hassan ibn Ali al-Askari, alayhi salam, the father of the 12th divinely appointed Imam, Imam al-Mahdi, was the 11th Imam of the Infallible Imams from the Ahlul Bayt of the Messenger of Allah sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi. The blessed and pious Imam carried the banner of Islam, undertook the goals of the religion, and sacrificed his life unto this way. He was indeed a fountainhead of knowledge and wisdom. He faced many incredible difficulties and tragedies and hardships in order to spread and promote and keep intact the high values and goals of the religion of Islam. Truly, there are so many countless favors that have been bestowed upon the Muslims by the divinely appointed Imams, the infallible and immaculate Imams, including Imam Hassan al-Askari, alayhi salam. Welcome back. It's an honor and a blessing to have you with us. You're listening to Dialogue on IRIB English Radio. So we are humbly at your service, speaking about the dialogues of Imam Hassan al-Askari alayhi salam, the 11th divinely appointed Imam. The 11th divinely appointed Imam, may Allah's peace and blessings be upon him, lived in a very difficult era, of course, as the birth of the 12th divinely appointed Imam came nearer. The political establishments, of course, put more pressure, more torture, more oppression, and more repression upon the infallible and immaculate Imams, peace and blessings upon them all. And so this is because they feared the birth of the awaited savior of humanity that, of course, will destroy their thrones of bloodthirstiness and cruelty and barbarism and savagery. And so, well, when we're looking at the dialogues of Imam al-Askari alayhi salam, there is a very interesting dialogue and back and forth that Imam al-Askari alayhi salam has with Isaac and Naysaburi. And so this companion, Isaac Naysaburi, of course, Naysapur or Naysapur, Nishapur, these are similar names for a city that is in the present-day Islamic Republic of Iran. And so there were many Shia who lived in that area, of course, in the era of Imam Rida alayhi salam. Many of the Shia came and lived in this era. And it's interesting, but in this conversation, which is a long conversation, we find that Imam Askari alayhi salam, he asks the Almighty Allah for the protection of himself and for his followers, and he prays that Allah takes care of all of the affairs of this companion of his, Ismail, in a very beautiful and very loving manner. And so he says in this conversation, Imam Askari says to Isaac and Naysaburi that the Ahlul Bayt alayhim as-salam, they are a people of a house who pity and have pity for our followers, meaning we have this kind of a pain for the pain of our followers, and that we are delighted in the favors and blessings that are given to our followers, and that we are happy for every blessing that Allah endows them with. And so what a beautiful manner Imam Askari alayhi salam speaks about his followers, how the pain of their followers is their pain, and how the happiness and the blessings of their followers are for them. It makes them happy and prosperous, and a very beautiful way in which we should be able to relate to our imams and to the imam of the time, especially, that they care for us much more than we could ever imagine. This is Dialogue, Imam al-Askari alayhi salam. IRIB English Radio. Please follow our radio programs and podcasts on iranradio.ir. And now we invite you to listen to Sheikh Salim Yusuf Ali.
One of the companions says that, you know, a group of us had come to Samarra, and we were waiting for that day where the Imam would come out. And so we could, you know, like come to him, we could, you know, pay our respects, say salam. And we got a letter which said that none of you should greet me and none of you should signal towards me, for therein lies the danger of death for you. So the Imam alayhi salam knows that they've come to Samarra. He knows that they intend to, like, you know, actually come and, you know, greet him. But he tells them preemptively, don't even like show that you know me or that you want to, you came here for this purpose. Because the Imam knows like that the security situation is to that level where the guards are watching even what the visitors are doing. Right? Anybody who even shows that like they have any type of affiliation, right, they're gonna go and search their stuff, they might persecute them, might throw them in prison, or even worse. Another example is that at one point the Imam alayhi salam was imprisoned, and in that prison, some of his Shias had already been imprisoned. So what happens is that they come to the Imam alayhi salam and they start to speak openly with him. He tells them, no, be quiet. Don't talk to me at this time. Don't be so open with me. And then he tells them that there's somebody amongst you who is pretending to be one of my supporters, but he's actually a spy. So what they do is later on they go and they check his stuff and they realize that the whole time he was in prison, he was writing down notes about each one of these Shias and like basically creating a dossier so that he could then present that to the Khalifa. So what we see from this is that even in the prison, right, where the political prisoners were being stored, even in the prison there were spies and they were watching what the Shias would do in prison too. Right, there was, you can see that like there was a lot of concern about, you know, the position of the Imam alayhi salam and his followers.
Thank you very much for listening to this episode of the program, Dialogue. For more information, visit our website at iranradio.ir. Until another episode, God bless you and fi amanillah.
Syria's resilience and its strategic alliances continue to thwart the Tel Aviv regime's attempts to destabilize the region, and the enduring battle for a liberated Palestine continues. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Please stay tuned for more. Press TV wrote, following the cessation of Israeli hostilities in Lebanon with a ceasefire on November 27th, residents of South Lebanon, along with those from other affected regions, were finally able to return to their homes. However, certain border villages and towns have been classified as high-risk areas due to heightened security concerns, rendering them inaccessible for the time being. There have been reports about Israeli occupation forces stationed at the border opening fire at Lebanese people who tried to return to their homes after the ceasefire. Meanwhile, a ceasefire in Lebanon coincided with the intensification of violent aggression in western Aleppo, where the Syrian Arab Army is currently engaged in confrontations against Israel-backed Takfiri terrorists, incorrectly described in mainstream media as Syrian rebels. These terrorist groups operating in Syria under the umbrella of Hayat Tahrir al-Sham are supported by the Zionist regime and Western powers and represent a broader geopolitical dynamic at play. The Zionist entity's recent disgraceful defeat in southern Lebanon after nearly 7 days of unchecked aggression, marked by its inability to penetrate Lebanese territory due to Hezbollah's adept military maneuvers, prompted a strategic recalibration. To salvage its already tattered image, the Zionist regime is now pursuing new fronts of war aiming to disrupt critical supply chains, facilitating the transfer of arms to the Lebanese resistance. This escalation follows a pointed warning from the Zionist entity's Prime Minister, Benjamin Netanyahu, to Syrian President Bashar al-Assad, telling him, "You're playing with fire." Netanyahu's statement, made in the aftermath of the ceasefire in Lebanon and admission of defeat against Hezbollah, directly references Syria's crucial role in helping the axis of resistance. Syria plays a pivotal role within the axis of resistance, serving as a key supporter of both Hezbollah and Palestinian resistance factions by facilitating the transfer of weapons and resources. Beyond its logistical contributions, Syria also hosts critical research facilities in the city of Aleppo, underscoring its strategic importance to the broader resistance network. Furthermore, Syria remains a frontline state in the struggle against Western-backed proxies, which aim to gain control of Aleppo and undermine President Bashar al-Assad's democratically elected government in Damascus. These dynamics highlight Syria's dual role as both a logistical hub and a steadfast actor in resisting external attempts to destabilize the region. Syria's arms depots, consisting of domestically manufactured weapons as well as supplies procured from other countries, have been instrumental in supporting Hezbollah's operations in Lebanon. Over the last decade, Syrian research facilities and scientific research centers dedicated to weapons development have been repeatedly targeted by the enemy. This has included airstrikes on strategic sites and the targeted killings of key personnel involved in coordinating arms transfers. In recent weeks, these attacks have intensified, signaling a deliberate effort to weaken Syria's military infrastructure and its role in sustaining the resistance. At the same time, resistance forces are positioned in Aleppo to counter the growing threat of enemy-backed proxies in and from northern Gaza. These proxies are attempting to overextend their resistance and cut off essential supply routes, further illustrating the interconnected nature of the regional war. The argument that Syria did not enter the war against the Zionist regime is rooted in the complex realities of its domestic and regional circumstances. Syria refrained from direct involvement alongside Hezbollah or Palestinian resistance factions because it is deeply engaged in its own internal battles, fighting terrorist forces within its borders. Despite this, Syria has continued to serve as a critical supplier of weapons to the resistance front. For instance, when Hezbollah targeted the Israeli regime's Tel Nof airbase, it used a modified version of the 302mm Syrian M-302 Khaybar-1 Multiple Launch Rocket System, MLRS, with a declared range of up to 225 kilometers, referred to as the Fadi-6. This adaptation, provided by Syria, included extending the rocket's range and reducing the warhead's weight, resulting in a total weight of 650 kilograms and a 140 kilograms warhead. Additionally, a military video released by Hezbollah on November 3rd highlighted its underground facilities and reinforced its commitment to resistance. It stated, "We will not leave the battlefield. We will not lay down our weapons." The footage showcased 44 rockets derived from Syria's Khaybar-1 alongside AKS-74U carbines, further demonstrating Syria's contributions to the Lebanese resistance arsenal. There have also been repeated discoveries of weapons by the IOF during their infiltration of warehouses and buildings in southern Lebanon, Among these findings were weapons of Russian origin, previously identified as being used by the Syrian Arab Army. These discoveries further underscore Syria's deep involvement and unwavering support for Hezbollah, demonstrating the extent of its commitment to the resistance. Between 2022 and 2024, Israel's operations in Syria largely focused on dismantling the country's air defenses, radar systems, and military research facilities. It systematically targeted critical components of Syria's military infrastructure, including scientific research centers, defense labs, and weapons depots. These sites are essential for Syria's military development and strategic capabilities. In early November 2024, for example, the Zionist regime launched an attack on a scientific research facility and defense labs of the Syrian Arab Army near Al-Safira in Aleppo countryside. These facilities are not only critical bridges for the transfer of weapons, but also central to Syria's broader role in supporting the resistance. Syria's scientific research centers, defense labs, and military manufacturing facilities form the backbone of its defense capabilities, enabling the production of weapons ranging from bullets to missiles and artillery.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
The Ocean of Dua. In the name of Allah, the Compassionate, the Merciful. Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Assalamu Alaikum. Welcome to another edition of the program, The Ocean of Dua. In today's program, we will listen to a commentary of Ziyara al-Yasin by Sheikh Abdul Raza Bahrani, a graduate of the Hawza Seminary of Qom.
On that morn, before the world was born, in this lonely world I hear that music near and far. Did we the cadence of divine music hear? Did we the
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم.
All praise belongs to Allah, the Lord of the worlds, and may Allah's peace and blessings be upon the best and the last of the prophets Muhammad and his pure and infallible progeny and household, especially his last successor Imam Mahdi, may Allah hasten his reappearance. And may Allah's peace and blessings be upon you and with you, my dear brothers and sisters. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. This is the Ocean of Dua, and I am Abdul Raza Bahrani. Insha'Allah, I will explain and interpret the passages and sentences of Ziyarat al-Yasin in this series of lectures. Now, let's listen to some passages of this Ziyarat.
The Ziyara of al-Yasin.
Ya Mawlai, Shagia Man خالفكم وسعد من أطاعكم أشهد على ما أشهدتك علي وأنا ولي لك بريء من عدوك.
O my master, certainly wretched is he who opposes you, and certainly happy is he who obeys you. So testify to me all that which I have besought you to testify. I am verily an ally of you, and denouncing your enemy.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad wa ajjil farajahum wal'an adahum ajma'in.
We were explaining the sentence of Ziyarat Ali Yasin, وَأَنَا وَلِيٌّ لَكَ بَرِيءٌ مِّنْ عَدُوِّكَ, and then I am your friend and ally, and I love you, and I am your wali, and I denounce your enemies, and I detest your enemies. We said that the love of Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam is an obligation which has been made incumbent upon all the Ummah of the Holy Prophet in the Holy Quran and by the order of God the Almighty to His Prophet and Messenger Muhammad, may Allah's peace and blessings be upon him and his pure and infallible household. I mean, in this verse, قُلْ لَا أَسْأَلُكُمْ عَلَيْهَ أَجْرًا إِلَّا الْمَوَدَّةَ فِي الْقُرْبَى. And then after that, I read you some narrations from the books of the Sunni scholars and the brothers of Ahlus Sunnah, in which they had quoted the Holy Prophet as saying that the love for Ahlul Bayt is necessary according to this verse of the Holy Quran. And if a person does not have the love of Ahlul Bayt and the Holy Prophet, his faith and his acts and his worships will not benefit him. Even if he worships God the Almighty between Safa and Marwa for 3,000 years. And then I read you some other narrations that talked about the love of Ahlul Bayt and the places that this love will come to our help. And after that, we mentioned that the love alone is not enough, and we need to have the loathing for the enemies of Ahlul Bayt, and we need to denounce the enemies of Ahlul Bayt as well. When we take a look at the sayings and statements regarding Allah the Almighty, we find the same thing. For example, in the word of Tahleel, I mean, La ilaha illallah, just saying that Allah is my Lord is not enough. And more important than that, and prior to that, we need to negate any other gods. We need to say that there are no other gods, and then we need to say, but Allah. So it is very important. Just one part of that is not enough. We need to loathe the enemies of Ahlul Bayt and denounce them, as well as mentioned in various narrations by Ahlul Bayt alayhim as-salam.
فَالْحَقُّ مَا رَضِيتُمُوهُ وَالْبَاطِلُ مَا أَسْخَدْتُمُوهُ وَالْمَعْرُوفُ مَا أَمَرْتُمْ بِهِ وَالْمُنْكَرُ مَا نَهَيْتُمْ عَنْهُ.
The truth is only that which you accept. The wrong is only that which you disallow. The good is only that which you enjoin. And the evil is only that which you forbid.
Then we continue this ziyarat, and the next sentence is, فَالْحَقُّ مَا رَضِيْتُمُوهُ وَالْبَاطِلُ مَا أَسْخَدْتُمُوهُ. So the truth is what you are pleased with, and falsehood and the wrong is what displeases you. وَالْمَعْرُوفُ مَا أَمَرْتُمْ بِهِ,
وَالْمُنْكَرُ مَا نَهَيْتُمْ عَنْهُ And the good is what you have instructed, and the evil is what you have prohibited. This statement highlights that the only criterion for determining truth, falsehood, good, and evil is Ahlul Bayt alayhi wasalam. All that satisfies the Ahlul Bayt, God's peace and blessings be upon them, is good even if it appears repulsive to us, or even if our defective intellects fall short of grasping the rationale behind it. All that displeases the Ahlul Bayt alayhi wasalam is evil and wrong and falsehood, even if it appeals to us. And the Holy Quran mentions, عَسَىٰ أَن تَكْرَهُوا شَيْئًا وَهُوَ خَيْرٌ لَكُمْ وَعَسَىٰ أَن تُحِبُّوا شَيْئًا وَهُوَ شَرٌ لَكُمْ Perhaps you may dislike a thing while it is good for you, and perhaps you may love a thing while it is evil for you, and it is not good for you. The 19th verse of chapter Nisa reiterates this concept. The verse of chapter Baqarah underlines the helplessness and vulnerability of our intellects in determining on the one hand everything that is good and beneficial for us, and on the other hand all that is evil and harmful for us. And our intellects at best can only inform us about the truth and falsehood of the general, like honesty, virtue, lie, deceit, and etc., and cannot enlighten us about the reason and purpose behind all actions, many of which may apparently even go against the apparent intellect, like struggling in the way of Allah the Almighty. Walhamdulillahi Rabbil Alameen.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Also, visit our website at parsetoday.com. Until the next program, take care and goodbye.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAD 5 and Intelsat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is iranradio.ir. And now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Attack on a school turned shelter claims the lives of a half a dozen more Palestinian civilians in Gaza City.